It's been a couple of months since HBO premiered Wig, the highly anticipated documentary follow-up to Wigstock the movie, which captured performances by some now long-gone drag legends.
The new documentary is meant to capture the current drag queen scene, but it was met by many with mixed feelings, as it focused more on the generational divide in LGBTQ culture and drag, with Lady Bunny commenting,
"Edginess is what drew me to drag, and yet the wider acceptance has brought bigger audiences and paychecks. Can't edgier drag queens have both? I'm old and greedy."
Today, Wigstock founder and drag legend, Lady Bunny, weighs in on the changing face of drag and the LGBT community, and why the most powerful weapon against regressives is ourselves.
Plus, why queer progressives have a hard time embracing Pete Buttigieg.
Why are folks more thrilled by fried chicken sandwiches than healthcare?
And a new study says talking to strangers or strange drag queens is good for your health. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Become a member and support this show at feastoffun.com/plus.
What's wrong?
You're on my phone. Hi.
Hi. Is this Lady Bunny?
It is.
Oh.
Oh, how fortunate.
It's so nice to hear your voice.
Carol, I thought you were dead, Miss Channing.
Oh, girl, last time we talked to you, you were working on Peggy Lee's Fever as a song parody.
Yes, and I didn't really want to touch it for a long time because my friend Ryan Landry does such a great version of it. In P-Town, it's his staple. But we don't live in the same city. I actually, in a wild moment, early on at the Pyramid, had a 3-piece combo backing me up, and I sang like 3 or 4 songs in a tribute to Peggy Lee. Ethel Eichelberger was very impressed, and she kind of took me aside and said, "You know, girl, you can sing, and that was great." And so I've always had a soft spot for that song because, of that time with Ethel. And so, there were some other people who were watching it who may have thought, "Ooh, that was good," but they didn't come up and sing. So,
did they clap?
Ethel was
at least?
Always very kind, and she also taught me how to put eyelashes on.
What was the opening line? You said Ellen had a party.
I don't. May I debut my new material?
You're worried that people are going to steal it. You're worried. One time you did a parody of the Kitty Cat song, and you put your name into the song, so you were worried that drag queens were going to lip sync it and not credit you.
I don't know why you harp on that for years. I mean, a drag queen, but you did notice that I stopped making, YouTube videos for the most part, and you do realize that a drag queen just won a pageant performing one of my parody medleys. There's people send me videos of queens in Puerto Vallarta, and doing my material. There's one in Boston who got the club owner to steal my backing tracks. I mean,
oh,
these
my
queens
God.
Are desperate.
Scamvestites.
But the thing is, all drag queens steal. When I make a parody song, do you think that I'm paying the clearance rights to use the material in a club?
Actually, legally, the club is paying Ass Crap and BMI for the ability to play music from the catalogs, and by de facto, because you're playing at a club that pays those licensing fees, is being paid. So yes,
but that's true. But in terms of ripping someone off, if a drag queen goes and lip syncs to a song that Rihanna has already made popular, and Rihanna is performing in giant stadiums, and the drag queen is performing in small bars, Rihanna doesn't care.
Yeah.
But if that you're performing her material. But if you're both performing in gay bars and you steal, someone who's on your same level or close to your same level, well, then guess what? After that queen stole my act and performed it every night at Jacques in Boston, I don't know if this was direct connection, but I never got booked in Boston, really, after that. I
mean, they found a hobo to dress up in wig and lipstick to be on your level?
I wouldn't call her a hobo, but I also wouldn't call her attractive.
You ever thought about, like, sending a cease and decease letter?
She-cist.
Look, I mean, drag queens are going to take any bit of dialogue from movies. They even lip-sync to Jackie Beats songs and the patter in between the song. I mean, come on. That's bad. You know, it's like sometimes I see the queens, lip syncing to Monet, and her doing her stand up routine. And I think, well, why don't they're funny? You know, why don't they just say that out loud?
Well, I think there's something about drag that where they're just like, kind of like, if it's there, I'll take it and I'll use it and it'll be fine. Right.
And that's why I have to say, it's not going to be there.
Mm. Girl, if I had a nickel for every time this show's been copied by somebody or our Cooking with Drag Queens has been copied by somebody, I'd be a millionaire.
And so that's what's stopping you from, like, because I've always enjoyed your music videos on YouTube and stuff. And so you're not doing them anymore because of that?
Well, I mean, sure. That's one factor. I mean, because I do a lot of parody medleys with short versions of the song, I don't always feel the need to do a whole song and a whole parody, because if you're not doing a whole song with lots of jokes and setups and a visual idea or whatever, then it's going to be a really short video and it's not worth getting a costume to do like 30 seconds for a minute and a half video. But anyway, there's a few songs that I'm interested in doing. But yeah, I mean, it's widespread theft.
It is a problem. And if you have good ideas, they inevitably, because we live in a capitalistic society, maybe that's the issue here, is that we're sort of relying on this idea that we have to work for a living as opposed to having universal basic income. And so it becomes an idea of like people stealing ideas from each other when it really should be a conversation in our community. And that kind of draws me to wanting to talk about the HBO documentary Wig, which, now that you guys have some time to let it settle down and think about it, do you feel like there's a buyer's remorse in allowing those cameras to document you guys? Because I got a sense from talking to you and other drag queens that you're not exactly thrilled about it.
No, there's not a buyer's remorse, and I'm very pleased with it. Mm-hmm. I wish they had allowed those cameras in, we did allow the cameras in, and I wish they had included more performers from Wigstuck last year. And that really wasn't the director's vision. That wasn't HBO's vision. I don't know to what extent the other producers or the production company, Matador, wanted to do, but I mean, they told me at one point that they didn't want this to be a concert documentary when I was bugging them to please put in more performances. And they said that they didn't want to be a concert documentary. I said, well, then why'd you make a documentary about a concert? It's like it's a concert. So, anyway, I think that they did something that was different with it. They included, a lot of old footage, which a lot of people told me they cried when they saw it and they loved seeing it. My original, there were just so many people who didn't even make it into the movie, and you can't include 6 hours of a festival in a 90-minute documentary, but I would have loved to see more performances.
Well, it seems like the documentary kind of lives in the shadow of Wigstock, the movie. And it was interesting that it drawed attention to the schism between drag queens of your generation and the younger queens. And this idea that somehow that torch isn't being passed on smoothly, that there's a sense of loss of gay communities and bars and venues and performances, and that sort of these RuPaul's Drag Race, sorry to get out of my mouth. The girls from that show, they're sort of turning drag into this like capitalistic commodity when, drag in its essence is anarchistic and rebellious.
I haven't thought of it along those terms, and I haven't thought of it – in terms of capitalism, and I don't want to begrudge anyone who's, mm-hmm. you know, making money, whose talent, you know,
is putting on pantyhose.
No, if you are yeah. a very wonderful performer, yeah. And you were on Drag Race and exposed to the nation, then more power to you. That's Bianca. She's touring like no one else, and she is extremely talented before and after Drag Race. You know, anyway, what I liked about the movie is that it didn't make conclusions for people. Mm-hmm. It put a lot of ideas out there for them to think about. And some people said, you know, they thought that it was really a love letter, you know, to Wigstock. And, you know, I see that because I am the festival producer and, you know, hope to do the festival again and have done the festival for many years. My thing was, I wish we could get more performances in. And I spoke to Jimmy James and she said, Bunny, get over it. You know, the movie's great. You know, I watched it twice. I never watch it. A lot of my friends said they watched it twice. And these are old school people who, you know all kinds of drag. And you can't include, it's nice of you to think about the performers, but you can't include all of them. So, you know, I tried to get over it. I mean, but that, yeah, I mean, it was...
It seemed more like the documentary was kind of like, what is the state of drag, kind of looking back at the past, but also seeing like the new festival, like in Bushwick, mm-hmm. you know, and seeing what that's like now and how things have changed a bit. But, you know, in many ways, just stayed the same.
Yeah. Bushwick mm-hmm. coming up this Sunday. I'm performing it Saturday and Sunday.
All right.
So in a big way, Wigstock still lives on. It just changed its name, and now you're the featured artist as opposed to the organizer.
Well, Bushwick is not Wigstock. Mm.
But I'm saying that the sensibility, the idea of doing a drag festival in New York City is sort of being carried by Bushwick or not?
Well, it is just being a different carried thing. By Bushwick, but it's not, I mean, and, you know, I'm not going to say that they... Mm. copied Wigstock. I mean, it's an outdoor drag festival. May we have more?
Please.
Part of it is I do sense that there's this sense of loss in what we had with the mainstreaming, not just of drag, but of homosexuality. We're starting to see the mainstreaming of transgender people. And, you know, and we talked about this in the past, that in the future, everyone's going to be a drag queen for 15 minutes. And it just seems with all these entertainers lip syncing battles, you know, and it's like showing these kind of macho figures wearing pantyhose and lipstick and posting things like that on their Instagram. It is kind of a refreshing thing to sort of be accepted in the mainstream. But there's also the sense of loss of your identity and uniqueness.
Not to mention the fact that many of my favorite queens don't lip sync at all.
They do Peggy Lee song parodies.
Bianca Del Rio, Dina Martina, Christine, a lot of them don't lip sync at all.
I guess I'm trying to figure out what drag is about now.
Well, drag is not political at all now. And yeah. at the Stonewall thing, the Stonewall 50th anniversary, I watched some, you know, interview and these drag queens were basically saying, hashtag love is love. And, you know, that's not an agenda. That's like vaguely signaling that, you know, I'm in support of gay rights. That's not what do we need to do? Where do I need to be? Who do I need to target? So drag is not political at all.
Are you excited about Pete Buttigieg? I'm sorry. I couldn't get the question out without laughing, but,
no, I'm not a fan of Pete Buttigieg,
but he'll be the first gay president. Don't you want to support a gay president?
Well, you know, because I'm not an identity politics voter, and I also wouldn't vote for a drag queen unless I liked their policies and could check out their donors and their record, voting record, whatever. Pete rubs me the wrong way because they're first of all, he started his campaign, as did Kamala Harris, with no policies. Unlike Kamala Harris, he was just coasting on being well-spoken and intelligent, which he is, but no policies. And Pete would even say in interviews that it was more about his values. What are his values? He's a fucking a gay man who's religious, who doesn't want to penalize Chick-fil-A, and who's been in the army. Well, I'm sorry, darling. That's who's right there. I don't have any values in common with Mayor Pete.
Don't you have 19 billionaires supporting your career?
No,
from
I don't.
New York State, your home state now?
Well, I mean, look, the other thing is that a New York Times article came out saying that Mayor Pete was part of the Stop Sanders wing of the party, along with, you know, longtime operatives Debbie Stabenow. It's actually shocking.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really? Oh, yeah, wow. I mean,
this is the thing that that people aren't aware of. But I couldn't even believe that New York Times was openly writing that, as if its supporters would be thinking, yeah, good, stop Sanders and stop. They would be thinking stop Sanders probably, but to sit there and think, let's stop Medicare for all, which 70% of the country, including over 50% of Republicans, want. So I mean, how insane that the New York Times would be like saying, ooh, isn't this great? You know, there's a whole bunch of Democrats, establishment Democrats, corporate Democrats, neoliberal Democrats who want to stop what 70% of the country wants.
Mm.
I mean, this is just insane. So he comes out with no agenda, no policies except vague values. Oh, and then says he favors like a, you know, some sort of not mandatory, but enlisting at age 18 for everyone, but not making it mandatory, but just kind of putting on the societal pressure. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't support free college. You do support signing people up for the young people up for the military and put the pressure on whether they like it or not. I'm like, wow. Why don't you ask the young people about how they feel about that? Because that sounds like something geared to the oldest Americans. Yeah, sign them up. You know, that'll straighten them out, these kids.
Yeah, at first I thought that Pete Buttigieg was kind of, hesitant to talk about his platform because he was navigating the difficulty of being an openly gay man running legitimately for the United States presidency. And so part of it was like, you know, we're trying to take a different unconventional approach because we're just trying to get people used to the idea of having a gay man speaking to them about these issues. But at this point, it does strike me as a little bit disappointing that he isn't as progressive as some of the top Democratic candidates right now, which is Sanders and Warren. And not Joe Biden, who actually fell third into the polls last week.
Yes. Well, however, the polls, as 2016 proved, they deceive. Mm-hmm. And all of my Twitter buddies who are running around saying, who are they polling that supports Biden? Are they calling, are these polls landline only? Mm. You know, indicating that his support is older. There's also a lot of black support for Joe Biden. And maybe that's because they just, you know his name or aren't as involved in politics or just think let's return to the years of Obama. But we don't often think about these people because we're not in contact with that mm-hmm. over 60 bunch. So I'll call Lipsinka and say ask her if she supports Biden. No, I'm just kidding.
Who?
Lipsinka. And Charles Bush and RuPaul. No, LaRue's not over 60 yet. Anyway,
soon though, right?
In 2 years,
the Warren and Bernie are progressives, but there's a big difference too. So I like a lot of what Warren says, and I'm always glad when I see friends who supported Hillary supporting Warren, because at least they know, well, maybe we did something wrong. Maybe we need a progressive Democrat. So that's great. However, I don't believe that Liz Warren is a progressive, and I think all we have to do is look at her voting record to see some real inconsistencies and things that she's campaigning on now, but she wasn't feeling that way as a senator before she started campaigning. The biggest one was she recently came out and said she wanted to cut the bloated military budget and apparently spend more of that on social services, except that she voted for 2 out of 3 of Trump's military budgets, including one that was more than the Pentagon even asked for. That would be a time to speak up against bloated budgets, and she did not do that. So she can talk about, moving away from fossil fuels as she does. And then I'll ask, well, where were you at Standing Rock with your people? Unquote. You know, where? I mean, she just hasn't had a very progressive record. You know, like Hillary, Hillary was a Goldwater girl in her youth. Warren was a Republican until the mid 90s. So all of that, you know, Defense of Marriage Act, you know, Roe v. Wade, all of those huge, you know, she sat on the sidelines as a Republican or conservative Republican. Then she didn't endorse Sanders in 2016, and he was the only progressive candidate running. She came out on the news since then admitting that the process of the DNC in 2016 was rigged against the only progressive, and she didn't make a stink about it other than to admit that. So she knew it was rigged and then went with Hillary anyway. So now she's a progressive. I think she just wants votes. You'll notice that a lot of candidates came out supporting Medicare for All because Sanders' vision popularized that. It was called radical and, you know, pie in the sky. His vision popularized that. And so Kamala Harris, even Tulsi Gabbard, Liz Warren, they all announced getting press. Oh, they're progressives on Medicare for All. And they've walked it back. Now, Warren is saying there's different paths to Medicare for All. And she tweeted that she wants access to health care for every American. And I tweeted her back saying, well, I have access to a Jaguar. That doesn't mean I can afford to drive one. Mm. And, you know, so it also there is zero mention of Medicare for All. One of the cornerstones of her alleged progressive agenda on her website. Why not? Because when she starts taking the corporate cash, if she says she's not going to take corporate cash in the primary, but will in the general.
Does it matter what their past was when in the present they're pushing for more progressive ideas?
Let's not bring Trump into this.
I'm talking about the ability of a candidate to change.
No, Trump never ran as a Democrat. He was never in public life as a Democrat. He's in New York. You have to get involved with certain circles, you know, to in a blue state like New York. He only became, you know, Republican because he thought he could win. I mean, Jesus Christ, Bill Clinton encouraged him to run. So it's like, but Trump is, I don't think he's a nut job. I mean, he doesn't, you know, even, but for someone like Liz Warren to even, you know, to be talking about, you know, policy, her platform, and she has a record of not acting in this way and being a Republican in the past. Well, we're talking about trillions of dollars at stake here. We're talking about running the United States. Do you not think that the establishment is aware of that money and they do not ever want it going to a truly progressive candidate? And let me tell you this, there's all this stuff about Bernie claiming media bias, which is very, very clear, the media bias against him. The New York Times, you know, reporter who's embedded with his campaign, Sidney Ember, her husband's a hedge fund manager. She interviews lobbyists all the time and doesn't even say what they are. And they're often negative pieces about Sanders. But here is how I would love to prove, without doing any media research, just from what you all see on the news. We can all do this together. So how many times do you see someone in the mainstream media praising Medicare for All? Pundits, guests, etc.
They don't.
Okay. 70% of Americans.
Only independent news media, like here, are going to be able to talking about that in a favorable way.
Well, then why do they spend so much time on Russia and nothing on the number one issue in this election, which 70% of us support? Why don't they do segments comparing what Bernie Sanders or Liz Warren is comparing, is proposing in relation to how that works in Cuba, Canada, England, Scandinavia, or the dreaded Venezuela? You know, they are not biased against Sanders because he's a Jew, because he's from Vermont, because he's balding. They hate Sanders because he's a true progressive. And trust me, if Liz Warren was a true progressive, you know, who hadn't already walked back to some extent her support for Medicare, oh, which she claims she's for, they would be her on her ass too. If she gets the nomination, they would be on her ass. They don't want to take money away from their pharma and insurance donors, and that's what runs the media, you know, along with all of the other, you know, unsavory. And this is what this is. So yeah, they're not just poisoned. The media isn't just poisoned against Sanders. It's poisoned against any real progressive. Is it poisoned around Elizabeth Warren? No. Because I don't think she's a real progressive, because she's signaling things like, oh, there's different pathways to Medicare for all. And you know what? She has a plan. So do I. I plan not to vote for her.
Well, right now, Bernie Sanders is the front runner, and he's not taking any corporate donors.
In some polls, in other polls, not. Yeah. You know.
But let me tell you how great that was. Do you remember when Obama at the state senate? No, it was a state affair. I don't remember. It was all the co-Congress was there, maybe State of the Union. And he said that Citizens United was terrible. It would turn corporations into people. And a Republican yelled out, liar. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So Citizens United, you know, makes corporations people. They can give unlimited amounts. And it's terrible for the democracy. So good for Obama for speaking out against it. I'm not saying he didn't turn out to be a Trojan horse for corporate interest, because he did. But so you can talk about it and say that it's bad, like Obama did, or you can actually take matters into your own hands, like Sanders did, and say, you know what? I'm going to prove that I'm not corrupt. I'm not going to take the money. Yes, it's there. Yes, my opponent can take it, but I'm not going to take it, so that you know that my agenda and my campaign are people powered. And that's the closest to grassroots fundraising I've seen, you know, in my life. So Liz Warren, very big difference here. She says she's not taking corporate cash in the primaries, but will take it in the general election. And, you know, I know what you're thinking is like, well, sure. That sounds good to most people. If you're going up against Trump, you need every trick in the book. Mm-hmm. Well, you could try, you know, an agenda that works. I mean, by not taking the money, you say that you're not beholden to anyone that's given you money in the campaign, except for people. And she's choosing not to do that in the general. She's also, you know, says no billionaire donors or whatever. She actually had one by the DNC list for her. So I do like what Liz Warren is saying. I just don't trust that she really is a progressive. And Bernie's one who's had the same positions for often decades. I mean, looking at some of the videos of him talking about climate change when it wasn't an emergency, this guy is a leader. He's not a Johnny come lately to the progressive movement. Mm. And the most important thing that I think people should be aware of that they're not is this should have nothing to do with is it Sanders' turn? Is it time for a woman? Is it time for a Jew? Is it time for a black woman? Is it time for... No, there are progressive Democrats and there are neoliberal centrist corporate Democrats like Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer. Mm-hmm. Then there are the progressive ones like AOC, Bernie Sanders, Nina Turner, you know, I mean, there's Ro Khanna. I mean, there's quite a lot of them, but few are as progressive with the records to back it up like Bernie Sanders. And if you don't think that looking, a lot of Democrats put their heads in the sand after 2016 and were like, oh, this is so gross. It's so horrible. Well, they their main focus is to just get rid of Trump. No, that is not my main focus. It is half my focus. I want to replace Trump with a progressive Democrat or independent in the case of Bernie Sanders, because another neoliberal just Google neoliberalism failed. Just Google that and you'll see all the ways in that Democrats have cut social services, that they have led to the gentrification because of their deals with real estate developers. And that's the reason that no one in the whole country, was like 99% of the cities, you can't make a minimum wage and afford a one bedroom apartment, which you would need with kids. So it's neoliberal Democrats or corporate Democrats, they'll promise you all kinds of things in when they're campaigning, and then they'll get into office like Obama did, who tried to cut Social Security via something called chain CPI cuts. And we was doing it was like, oh, I've got to give in to the Republicans. They're being so horrible. Joe Biden tried to cut Social Security 3 times. Bernie Sanders, a progressive, wants to strengthen Social Security. So there's a big difference between neoliberals and corporate Democrats and progressives. And I there are many reasons that I do not trust Elizabeth Warren to be the same old, like Kamala Harris. She got headlines for saying she was not going to attend the AIPAC conference. Then Kamala and Liz Warren met with them at their offices instead. Well, if you're not going to meet with them, if you're not going to meet with them, don't meet with them. Don't meet with them.
It is interesting. Like, my mother, she is in love with Pete Buttigieg. And like, even she's kind of like insinuating, like, why can't you and Mark be more like Pete Buttigieg? I'm like, Mom, I'm judging a lot of booties. Okay. And it strikes me that there's almost this kind of romantic notion with the idea of this distinguished leader. That's kind of like The Bachelor, only in Pete Buttigieg, he's giving a brown rose to his corporate donors. it's interesting. People still have this idea that the president has to be this kind of transcendent, godlike creature that is this benevolent, wise, overarching father or maternal figure. Mm-hmm. I want platforms. I want progressives, and I want to see universal health care in the next 4 years. The only way we're going to get it is by getting people on the streets knocking on doors. And people listen to this podcast. They listen to you. And I want the listeners right now to understand that in the next year for the 2020 election, Facebook status updates are important. But what really matters is canvassing with Lady Bunny, going door to door. And it's kind of like trick or treating, but you get people to actually do something that doesn't give you candy. It actually gets people to vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yes. I mean, I'm attending an event where he's speaking tonight in Brooklyn.
Are you going in drag for it?
Yes. I've never been to a campaign event. I've never been to anyone's campaign event, but I feel that strongly about Bernie Sanders. Now,
wait a second. You're showing up in full drag to a political campaign rally.
Call me Lady Bernie.
Are you going to get up on stage and lip sync?
She gives me beaver.
Give me Bernie.
I spoke with someone from the campaign after I'd purchased my ticket. I said to them, look, I would like to be involved in whatever way you see fit. But before you, involve me, just know that in some respects, because of my vulgar act or whatever, I am toxic and I don't want to give ammunition to anyone who is, wanting to take video of me and say, look what freak supports Bernie Sanders. That's here she is. Belating a squirting dildo,
it's very reasonable.
Right.
You're very wise, Bunny.
Very wise to see through that.
But so part of it is too. It's about getting people energized, and you bring a certain level of celebrity, and you were on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars last year. in a coffin.
Yes.
And so, you know, the getting college students, getting youth people understanding that it's not about just about status updates, but about knocking on doors and showing up to the polls.
If young people came out to vote, as they didn't much of the time in 2016, because their hopes were dashed, they'd maybe given money to Bernie. They'd, you know, if it was $27 or whatever, maybe he had gotten them engaged in the political process for the first time. I mean, his slogan is not me, you know, us. Like, and get engaged in the, and run for office. Hillary's is I'm with her. You know, I mean, it's just like, it's just so, look.
It's a polar opposite of approach.
If you're not engaged in politics, you know, you may just look at Bernie's, you know, physique or, you know, and say, oh, he's angry. You know, why is he yelling? Listen, one in four people will go to their grave with student debt. If we want this country to be better, then we've got to make education more affordable, because people that don't get educations are looking at these automated machines and thinking, you know, I mean, listen, the times are tough if you don't have a college education, and so we have to make it easier to make. Do you think all of these countries that are soaring, you know, with tech stuff, India, China, whatnot, do you think that they're skimping on the education?
They're not. And they say that actually wiping out all of the student debt here in the United States is basically about equivalent to the tax cuts that the super wealthy have gotten just like in the past year. Like, you, within 1 year, you could just wipe it all out and it's like nothing. And nobody, you know, people do complain about them getting these tax cuts, but you know what? They still get them.
Right. But he's saying to pay for the student debt cancellation by having a tax on Wall Street transactions. In other words, if you can afford to play with your money, just pay a little surtax on the transaction to help your nation become better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's one thing that I wish people would understand that goes so far beyond what their appearance are, or what state they're from. So Bernie Sanders is not a socialist. I wish he would not call himself a socialist, but you do notice he calls himself a democratic socialist. And what does Liz Warren call herself? A social democrat, to make it seem almost like the same, but more of a democrat. Yeah. Mm. More corrupt, more beholden to Wall Street, more beholden to. So it's like, if you look up socialism, that's a system under which everyone has public ownership. Like, your car is owned by everyone. Your home is owned by. Bernie Sanders is not recommending anything like that. He wants a step towards socialized healthcare and higher education. That's not, I mean, you know, and they're using this. Sadly, I'm seeing the Fox News crowd and the Republicans and the centrist Democrats using socialism as a scare tactic. Well, what they need to understand is that Parks Department, Fire Department, Police Department, Public Schools, Post Office, these are all Social Security. These are socialist things currently existing, which are all very, very popular. Public swimming pools, public libraries, you know, NPR. So this is not a foreign thing. You know, if you don't know what socialism is, you just think, you know, oh God, isn't that like communism? Well, no, it's not. And Bernie Sanders is not even really advocating socialism.
Well, that's a part of the reason why, like, even things like National Public Radio has gotten more conservative in their platform and the commentary and coverage, because they're having to rely on corporate donors and less on public funds. And if you want to keep that progressive voice alive and progressive, you know, you have
NPR's
to.
NPR is not it.
They were advocating all kinds of like regressive stuff. And I'm just like, well, I guess it's up to, you know, other people to do that kind of stuff. This is the thing, like, you know, with the Popeyes chicken sandwich fever. I don't know if you've been following all this stuff. Like, people are so outraged and upset that they can't get access to the sandwich, but they're pulling out guns and holding hostage the employees at you know, these fast food places because they're so excited about these fried chicken sandwiches. And I'm just kind of like, can somebody put up a, you know, register to vote polling booth there? Or you know, to me, it's like
a fifth of the country can't find America on the map. You know, we're dumb as hell. And
we're excited about fried chicken sandwiches. And I just want to know, have you had one?
I didn't get the fever for the fried chicken sandwich, but the fried chicken has given me diabetes and heart disease and high blood pressure and GERD, acid reflux. So
and I'm just wondering, like, you know, are we sort of doomed to the fact that we're talking more in terms of the media about the viral phenomena of a marketing campaign about a fried chicken sandwich than we are about the fact that most Americans don't have health care still?
Well, you know what? This is another one of my pet peeves. There was a trans person, a woman, who was the face of L'Oreal. They'd never hired anyone, a trans person, to be the face of L'Oreal before. Her name's Monroe Bergdorf. I met her years ago in London. So she got this groundbreaking position. And then Charlottesville happened with the, you know, KKK or white nationalists or whatever. And she was interviewed and she gave a statement saying that all white people are racist. Now, that was the poll quote, which Piers Morgan and a bunch of other talk shows tore her apart with. And that wasn't all that she said, but that was the poll quote to make people angry. Because white people who maybe went to a Black Lives Matter or posted about Black Lives Matter or signed petitions or whatever, they don't want to be told that they're racist. But Monroe's point was that with systemic racism being such a problem, even Hillary Clinton used the word systemic racism. So this is not a surprise. Mm-hmm. This is not an out there concept. If you're not doing anything, you're part of the problem. Or what is the old line? If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Okay, that's assuming that we're all good people, and Monroe is assuming that we all take to the streets for causes. We don't even care about ourselves. You just said it. We're more concerned about fried chicken sandwiches and pulling guns out than we are our own health care. And, you know, as a lifelong Democrat, I used to make fun of working class Republicans and say, why do the poor vote rich? Because even if you're the foreman at a factory and you get promoted, I mean, you're a worker and you get promoted to be foreman, you're never going to be anywhere near the 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, or 5%. So you're never going to benefit from the tax cuts for the wealthy that every Republican wants. But now I'm forced, seeing what corporate Democrats get up to, you know, with Obama's, cabinet was picked by Citibank before he was even in office. I mean, we Democrats now I have to make fun of because they're not looking out for their own protection. It's like you look at these Democrats, it's like, oh, okay, so y'all are going to crash the economy and the housing market again because you refuse to regulate Wall Street? And it's like, you know, neither one seems beneficial to me. So it's like when we're not even concerned about our own, you know, plight, you know, our own financial health, how are we going to, jump in and suddenly be concerned about something that's going on in Charlottesville that a trans makeup model? So L'Oreal fired Monroe Bergdorf because they realized, oh, she's not just trans, which is trendy, so let's try and sell our product based on a trend of trans, and she's also black, and oh, that's controversial, she said something against, you know, all the white people, we need to buy our product. So it's like, you said it all. When we're concerned about fried chicken, then Medicare for all. And you're damn right. We are. We're stupid. So
Monroe just recently, she talked about the toxic LGBTQ hierarchy.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. The left is using trans as a cause to virtue signal and show how they are so wonderful with marginalized communities, trans women of color. Go to Out Magazine. Every other article is about trans women or trans women of color. And I'm not saying that that in itself is a bad thing, but so what is the agenda of people who are running around talking about pay attention to trans people of color, who, trans women of color, who are being murdered? When are they going to be honest about this and say what we need to do? So are you seeing any trans women of color who are older and unattractive getting murdered? No, because they're hooking. And any trans friend of mine tells me what this violence comes from. It can come from being in a bad neighborhood, you know, or other things, but it can also be because, you know, it with hooking, you know, you're some trans girls don't tell the guys their tea.
Part of it is that we're not creating economic opportunities for trans people to not have to rely on sex work. And we're not, because we make sex work illegal in so many parts of the country, that it's driving people underground and putting them at risk.
Well, I'm all for legalizing sex work. But the thing is, are these you know, get-togethers where, you know, they say the name of trans people who have been, I mean, listen, if you need to grieve or memorialize them or whatever, but when you want to move on from that, what is the goal in terms of listening to trans women of color? Lady Red from Johnny McGovern's show made a video. All of y'all are talking about trans women of color and the violence against trans. Why don't you help a trans woman, you know, get a job so that she doesn't have to do sex work? So I think that that's a very important next step, which you know, who knew that Lady Red would lead the way? But it's like there are trans.
She knows what a Popeye's fried chicken tastes like. Sandwich.
I guarantee you that.
She wears it as perfume.
She has them take the pickles off.
There and use those as deodorant. There are. I mean, there's organizations that seek to help trans people find work in the real world, you know, and train them and whatever. I mean, do we need to have benefits for those? Because no one is talking about the prostitution. No one is. I mean, I did go to the Reclaim Pride March in New York City, and they had a couple trans women of color saying, you had the crowd chanting, legalize sex work, legalize sex work. And I thought, you know, I don't have a problem with that, but does that mean legalize it for, you know, everybody? Because I can't imagine that becoming the rallying cry of HRC and GLAAD.
I definitely can't see that either. But I think, you know, as far as trans rights go, I think a lot would, Medicare for All would be super helpful for the community, because a lot of what they're looking for is medical intervention at a younger age. You know, that's why you have a person that realizes they're trans at 17, 18 years old out on the street and trying to survive because the family throws them out. And if they could get some kind of help, you know, from the government, It would make a big difference.
Well, that's a good point. Sadly, I don't think that the part of the left which has weaponized identity into putting us all into different compartments. You're an old white man. You're an old white Jewish man. You're a black female. You're a, you know, a white male gay candidate. I mean, you know, I don't think that the establishment left, which seeks to bond us with our identities over concepts, what we are as opposed to what we, they're not supporting Medicare for All. So I do hope that it gets down to those young trans women or older trans women or in between that need Medicare for All, that Bernie Sanders is the most likely candidate to get that. But, you know, I see this identity politics stuff all the time. It's like, you know, oh my God, you're talking down to a black woman. Okay, hold on. That's like a sick debate tactic where you don't ever want to get to the root of things. First of all, it should not matter what I am or what the person is who I'm talking to. It's the idea that I'm saying, and can you refute that, deny it, confirm it, you know, argue with it or whatever. That is the classic identity politics. You know, oh my God, a white man talking down to a black woman. Well, anyone can talk down to anyone in a free society. Anyone can talk down, you know, a cisgender can talk down to a transgender and vice versa.
I know the New York Times called you a transgender legend.
Superstar.
Superstar. What is your gender identity?
My gender identity is to meet me. If you get the pronoun wrong, because I don't even know what it is, and you've been nice in every other aspect of our get together, and I know that you're a decent person, then I don't mind explaining it to you. But listen, people call me he, people call me she when I'm out of drag at the airport. In fact, this was hilarious. So I walked into the men's room in an airport, and my hair, on my own hair, not wigs, is, you know, down to my shoulders. And so this guy, no, I held open the door for a guy who was going into the men's room where I was going. And he had, because he had a baby, in his arms. And I was horny. No, just kidding. Lady Epstein. A black woman came up and saw my hair and walked in behind me and got confused about what she thought she was going into the women's room, but saw my hair and thought, well, if that thing's going in the men into that bathroom, it must be the women's room. And then I turned around and we had a moment, and I'm like, you know, and the guy who I was holding the door open for was confused. He's like, why is this woman going into the men's room? And I'm glad she's holding the door open for me. And I'm like, I will mix you all up.
Well, so you, do you identify as non-binary? Do you feel those words describe you?
I just hate to get involved with the labels because people are like, put me in this rigid box and, unless I'm fluid. And it's like, I mean, I guess non-binary, if that means someone who has elements of both male and female and isn't afraid to show them or whatever. But I don't like the term non-binary. I mean, maybe you would just say it's a sissy or a drag queen.
Or you're a gender anarchist.
Miss Thing. So, I mean, I did go with a trans friend to a freestyle concert in Coney Island on Friday, and they put wristbands on us, and I looked over because mine was tight, and I said, did yours fit on your large, not very feminine wrist like mine didn't? So, I mean, it's like, I would love for people to be less scared than people are currently making others with the labels, because they're afraid. There's been this big shift. Mm-hmm. And I think people are afraid to talk about it because they'll be read the Riot Act. And I think we should actually, until they really understand it, they should talk about it more.
Sure.
And here's an example of how people get so excited about it. So ID Magazine ran tweeted a link that said drag icons from New York City. And the thumbnail picture was Amanda Lepore. So I posted that Amanda Lepore is trans. She's not drag. She's not a drag superstar. And nor was Paris, who was also trans, featured. So all hell broke loose because suddenly I was RuPaul trying to keep trans people from doing drag. This is what, and I was like, look at my record. What kind of people do you think performed at Wigstock, from trans women to trans men to women to men to, you name it. I don't care, as long as they're
talented. You've had people without wigs at Wigstock.
Dean Johnson.
Well, so, and she does not, Amanda Lepore does not identify as a drag queen. When we interviewed her, we were specifically told by the publicist, do not refer to her as a drag queen.
She's not a drag queen, but people want to say now that they thought that by my posting that and saying she's not a drag queen, and that this article is in a sense misgendering her, which is the next worst thing, that they say is apart from the violence towards trans people. And so everyone jumped down my throat because they thought I was trying to limit what trans people could do and that I was against bio queens. And what was Wendy Wilde?
What was Wendy Wilde?
Well, she dressed up in costumes and was a woman and was one of the founders of Wigstock. So, I mean, give me a break. So, I enjoy chatting with people because, the idea of drag has changed. But the interesting thing to me is some kid was saying on – and I know how ancient I sound when I say kid, but I sound ancient when I don't say kid. Tweeted, I said, Amanda billed herself as the world's most famous transsexual for over a decade. He said, you're transphobic to even use that word. I said, LOL, will you please go and tell your gender studies class that you are calling a trans woman transphobic because of what she billed herself as several years ago?
Mm.
You're now shutting down in an attempt to defend trans people. You are now, you know, saying that they should not have billed themselves as something back then, which you've, I mean, it's, and the whole thing, you know, some trans performer who's very interesting, young, we said, well, you know, I do drag and I identify as drag queen. I'm like, look, that drag queen is not your gender ID. You may do drag. Please come do it. Who do you think inspired me to do drag? A black trans woman in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Miss Tasha Khan, Chattanooga's own Bubbling Brown Sugar, Chattanooga's own 20th Century Fox. It's like, but the thing is, if Tasha or this other trans person who does drag and wears wigs and lip syncs and whatever, if they go to the doctor, they're not going to say that they're a drag queen, because that's what they do at work. They're going to say that they're a trans person so that the person can know about hormones or, you know, test this or, you know, not test this or, you know, whatever. And so it's like if a man puts on a male wig, is that drag? No, it's not drag. If a man is a plumber, then does he ID as a plumber? No, his gender identity is a man, or if you really want to use today's terminology, cisgendered man. Mm. And, you know, it's like his gender identity is not plumber. So a trans person who you know, says that she does drag or works at drag clubs by putting on wigs and gowns and lip syncing, you know, that's not their gender identity. That's what they do for a living.
You know, there's a study that just came out that says talking to strangers can actually be profoundly good for your mental health and well-being.
Oh, you mean don't stay on the whole flight buried on your phone talking to people who well, you'll never
I've
meet?
Hung out with you, you know, out in public, out of drag. And what's really interesting about you are very much similar much to me and other. And Mark and I do this is that we're very comfortable in talking perfect strangers about any topic.
Oh, yeah. Well, my father always harassed waiters. I mean, in a jovial way.
Mm.
So they basically studied the mental health of bus and train commuters. And this actually took place in Chicago. And they asked them how comfortable were they to talking to a stranger on the bus or the train. And the people who actually had done that and were more likely to do it had a boost in self-confidence and a feeling of achievement. That actually talking to strangers, even if the conversation is superficial, actually improves the mental well-being of both individuals for the rest of the day. So in terms of like bringing communities together, and I think this is, you know, what... You know, in terms of like the anxiety over wig, the documentary and the changing face of LGBTQ culture is that we're losing opportunities to have a face-to-face conversation with somebody we don't know that's not based on sexual desire. Right. And so that's why to me, it's like it's so important to go to a pride parade celebration, because it's one of those rare opportunities that we get to share and exchange interactions with people face to face that we've never met before.
Well, also, it's proven that looking at blue screens, whether on a computer or on a television, and I don't know about cell phone, is depressing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're having trouble sleeping, doctors will tell you don't look at your phone or cell phone or computer for the last hour, because it's just this, you know, is morass the correct word? It's just like, you know, it's like a video game. So look, go on a train. Do you see anyone talking to each other? I mean, when I grew up, if you were on a flight, especially for a long flight, you definitely said, unless everything about their body language said, don't speak to me, you know, hi, you headed home, or, you know, you going on vacation, just to make the journey sitting there with a tray table, you know, in your face, eating slop, a little bit more pleasant, and maybe be a little bit less grumpy when they need to get up and use the bathroom and you have to get up out of your seat. You know, it's just courtesy. It's just considering other people.
And wear goddamn deodorant and bathe before you get on an airplane. For crying out loud.
Oh my God.
Maybe we should wear deodorant and not antiperspirant. You know, and I'm seeing all of these things about how antiperspirant is bad because it has toxins and it clogs up the
that's definitely been an accepted knowledge for the last 30 years or so is the alum in antiperspirants and other chemicals as opposed to a deodorant can actually interfere with your body's ability to detoxify.
Well, it's not just to detoxify. It has toxins in it.
Oh yeah, and it adds stuff to it.
I was on a cruise, and I went to a toxins seminar because I don't like to drink and sunbathe all day.
At sea cruise?
No, I was on one of those years ago, but I was on. It was a new one called Pacaya, and it was the most deluxe one. It was on a celebrity cruise ship, but it was great. They had Leslie Jordan and Alex Newell, phenomenal singer, and some other really talented drag queen I'd never seen. It was great. Helen Hunt, sister.
You and Leslie Jordan worked as waiters in a restaurant one time.
Well, he worked as a waiter. I was a busboy. They misgendered me.
So that you went to the seminar.
So I went to the seminar, and it was a Russian guy, so it could have been disseminating fake information. But he was like a fitness guy, and he was saying, basically, if you don't put it in your mouth, don't put it on your skin. That goes for antiperspirant. Excuse me. That goes for sunscreen. Basically, if you don't put it in your mouth, don't put it on your skin. And it was an eye-opener. He said all kinds of stuff like, if you eat 3 meals a day, you should poop 3 times a day. And if you're not pooping often enough, you're not drinking water. And I know this to be true because I have a relative who doesn't drink the 8 or 12 whatever glasses you're supposed to drink to be able to facilitate regularity. He was going into it with all of these healthcare frauds, and some of it really rang home because I was recently prescribed not that recently, about 4 years ago, omeprazole. Prilosec, I think, is the name for acid reflux. So, I went to a couple different doctors since then, and when you have acid reflux, they said, you just have it, so you're just taking this pill on a prescription for life. You can buy it over the counter, but it's not as strong. Never did one. It got to be really bad about a month ago. And I was walking down the street. I had wasn't awake, so I had 2 coffees. And I was walking down the street, and I started going,
did you see yourself in a mirror?
A poster for DragCon. and RuPaul cons you out of your money. I said, honey, what is wrong with you? That's not a cough. That's not a sneeze. And I went to the doctor, and he just said, yeah, it's acid reflux. You have to be careful. So I looked it up online. Well, none of those doctors who just were ready to put me on a lifetime of Prilosec even told me, don't have coffee, don't have fried foods, even Popeye's chicken.
Chocolate.
Don't have orange juice. Don't have, actually they said don't have meat, and especially not, red meat, which is the new devil that will be the wedge issue for the left if AOC bans burgers to help climate change. But it's like I just thought, what a weird system this is. I have a problem, and you're not even going to tell me what I need to stop doing in 4 years. All these different doctors, they never said, do you drink coffee? Cut it out. Or, don't have it anytime, near bed. So I think our whole, like the Russian guy on the cruise said, we've really got to do some digging. I mean, it's dangerous to dig on the internet because you can get into rabbit holes. But I mean, I posted something a few years ago about antiperspirant might be bad. You would not believe the backlash I got.
I can imagine people get very attached to their consumer products and you know, the way they smell. But, you know, one way to really to counteract that is to just, you know, you can still have coffee. You can still have all those things, is just eat less of it and to be a little leaner. And also, too, is like weight. Don't wear clothes that are very constricting. That's also another
thing. Yeah, stop tucking your dick.
Or does that mean no more girdles, honey? I don't know if y'all.
Wise. You wear silky, these very loose, flowing
look
gowns.
Out Silky Nutmeg and Darien Lake and Latrice, honey.
Oh, here they comes, I'm sure they all have acid reflux.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for them, but. You know, when they sort of look at,
I mean, I had it, yeah. I had it for years, and yeah. Then I just, you know, and I was taking that kind of stuff, and then I lost, you know, 20 some pounds, and it went away.
Oh, it's definitely connected to mm-hmm. being overweight, mm-hmm. For sure. So but I mean, the doctor never said, you know, you could lose weight and
no, he never said that to me either. He said, don't eat 3 hours before bedtime. Don't have anything to eat or drink 3 hours before bedtime.
Well, that will reduce the calories you consume.
Yeah.
Are your calories in sperm?
Not too much, no.
You know, you can drink all the sperm you want. Dr. Fausto says it's okay. Just don't put it on your face because it's rich in chlorine, and chlorine is corrosive to your skin.
You are so kind to share the benefits of your decades of research of cum guzzling.
There's a new study that says by Chinese doctors that says fecal transplants. Not just a powerful treatment against obesity, but also against depression.
So if somebody's depressed, you should just tell them to eat shit?
No. Well, they were studying...
shit in my ass.
Chubby, depressed mice. Shit in my ass? they're studying depressed mice, and they've observed that their intestinal flora was very different. And right now, a treatment is being developed that basically it's fecal transplant pills that you can take, which is poop in a pill, and it gives it the ability to change your gut flora. A lot of Chinese folks interviewed about this on the internet said they would not take this therapy even if they were severely depressed because the thought of taking a feces pill is disgusting. Would you swallow? I mean, you've swallowed worse.
Well, I mean, Japanese certainly like feces corn. I've never seen such a wide array of it in a Tokyo sex shop. I got pooped out just looking at it. I don't know about the feces pill, but yeah, I doctors are in such a hurry now that they don't even tell you drug interaction precautions, and there's certain antibiotics which don't work if you have them with milk or cheese, dairy, you know? It's just like, you know, at my doctor, and I know that even if we could get Medicare for all tomorrow, you know, not all of this would go away. They actually, I have to sign in and take a picture. And I'm like, I'm sick, you know, give me a break. And then I have to put my fingers in this sensor thing. And I told them when they first got that, I said, I'm not a criminal. I'm paying you to come here. You should not be treating me this way. But our whole medical system is criminal.
So they're assuming that you're going to stiff them on the bill.
I guess that's what they're thinking, you know.
They took one look at you and said, that is no bunny and no lady.
they took one look at me and said, honey, that's gonna cost a lot to fix that.
Vera, cancel all my appointments. This one's gonna take a long time.
Do a credit check on that one.
Experian.
You know, one thing I would like to criticize Bernie Sanders on is that I think that he's done a poor job, and I spoke to someone on his campaign about this, a poor job of explaining Medicare for all. Now, no American wants to hear, vote for me, I'll raise your taxes. And in that debate where he was asked about raising the taxes, he at first skipped the question. And then said, yes, but they will have, you know, more taxes. Well, I don't think that's the right approach. I think the right approach is to say, you will pay more taxes. You will pay no premiums monthly. Mm. You will pay no deductibles. And, you know, a few years ago, when I quit drinking, I fell down and broke my wrist and went to the doctor and needed surgery. They were called me to schedule it. And I said, can you tell me how much this cost? And they said, no, we can't. We subject the claim, you know, to your insurance company. And I was like, you mean you can't even give me a ballpark? I'm not independently wealthy. Are we talking 5, 15, 50,000, 500,000? You know, what are we talking about? And they said, you know, we really can't stay. So in the end, with the physical therapy, it was around 18,000. And for whatever insurance I had, they decided they were going to pay around 7 or 8,000 for it. So the whole concept of insurance in this country is broken. Mm-hmm. You pay out the nose every month in the hopes that you don't get sick or need medical care, and that you'll be covered when you do need it. And then you do need it, and you're not completely covered.
The simple phrase is, vote for Bernie, save money. That's all, you know, Americans understand that. It's this complicated conversation about how the premiums and then the you're raising in tax and all this stuff. Just say, we're going to save you money. You're going to save money. That's all you have to say.
It would save money. And yeah. I mean, who is running around saying, yeah, I love my private insurance? No one. No. I mean, we've got people in this country who stick in jobs, who stick in relationships because of the good insurance. You know, this is terrible. This is not a free country.
No, and a lot of the employers who have, you know, shitty jobs with low paying wages understand that. And that's why they push so hard for this. You know, that's why even so-called progressive cable news channels are really sort of burying Bernie and undermining universal health care, because they are part of a system that wants to have people attached to their shitty jobs. And when people aren't stuck at the job because of their need for health care, then the employees either have to make those jobs better or they have to pay more.
Well, and the rich people make so much money when people go bankrupt and lose their house, and everybody makes money because they've lost everything. They're like, here, I can't afford to healthcare. Take my house, take my car, take everything.
And if I'm not mistaken, bankruptcy, before Obamacare, bankruptcy was the biggest cause of healthcare costs were the mm-hmm. biggest cause of bankruptcy. I believe they still are.
Mm, so they still are,
we're literally bankrupting our people, you know, who are sick. I mean, that's the thing about whether you want to call it progressives or whether you want to call it democratic socialism or a step towards socialism. This is the basic difference. It between socialist or democratic socialist or whatever Bernie's progressives, whatever Bernie Sanders is that the government takes a bigger role, including social services that we need, Social Security, Medicare, all the stuff that made FDR so popular. It thrills me to no end to see Cardi B saying, vote for Daddy Bernie. FDR was the greatest president, you know, this country had ever had. And I read today that there were no financial crashes in the 50s and the 60s because you were still feeling the effects of FDR's New Deal. So, I mean, you know, I love agreeing with Cardi B. I love that she, you know, endorsed Bernie Sanders and got so much, you know, heat for it. Do you know that Lizzo tweeted, sent an interview, you know, don't worry about people's age. Listen to what the man's saying. Mm. And then she retweeted it. They pounced on her so hard, the centrist, that she took the tweet down.
Oh, really? So, Lizzo caved? Yeah. She needs to listen to her own music.
But you need to understand how Sanders supporters are made to feel like we're other. No. I'm other because I wear 5 wigs, I take drugs, I love dirty material, and I'm an atheist. Okay? I'm not other because I want Medicare for all. I'm not other because I want the money that we spend on war to go to help the people in this country instead of tearing other countries down. I'm not other because I'd like to see young people get a leg up with, you know, with more affordable college or not so young people help with their, you know, student death and debt, and action on climate change, which Bernie has by far the most far-reaching plan. You know, it's like I'm not other. I'm concerned that this country is going in the wrong way, and that's one reason, the economic pain that I like to focus on as to why Trump got elected. So, of course, there's racism, and, you know, of course, there was misogyny towards Hillary Clinton, but those three states in the Rust Belt that voted for Obama twice, Barack Hussein Obama, and then they flipped to vote for Trump, honey, they weren't racists. They'd already voted for Barack Hussein Obama twice. They knew that Democrats had pumped them and that 8 years under Obama didn't do much for anybody, and that Obama left office with his tail between his legs after trying to push the TPP trade deal, which was like Bill Clinton's NAFTA, which killed 1 million jobs. The TPP may have killed, you know, 500,000. Those jobs are in those people's area.
Sure.
They felt it.
So I mean, it's like, I mean, Hillary Clinton tweeted yesterday, oh, it's Labor Day. We know we got to support unions. And I tweeted back at her, you know, centrists like you and Obama ignored unions. Those were the Democrats' biggest voting base. So how do you ignore your biggest voting base and expect to win? And this is what's really confounding to progressives when we see them ganging up on Sanders to stop Sanders with, you know, Pete Buttigieg and others and stop Medicare. It's that we get the sense that they would, that centrists like Hillary and Obama and Pelosi would rather lose to Trump than to a progressive like Bernie Sanders, because he's going to fuck with their donors. He's going to fuck with their fossil fuel donors, their insurance donors, their pharmaceutical, their defense donors. If he's a man of his word, which we never know until they get into office, but he's been running the same word for decades when it was much less, you know, popular, and even in 2016 was called radical. I mean, you know, look at almost all the top tier candidates except Biden promising some form of Medicare for all. You know, I mean, Bernie is a leader. And, you know, it's like, I don't think I finished my thought, but I would like to, about how, you know, socialism or progressives see government as something that can be kinder and provide for people, not so much that would go overseas and waste that money on imperialistic wars. Do you know what I love to hear from young people? How they're questioning capitalism and imperialism, because objecting to war is not just a moral issue. It's an economic issue. Almost one half of our taxes go to pay for these wars, and they never end. Do you ever hear them talking about the Afghanistan war when it's the longest war in the U.S. history? No. So Republicans want to privatize everything. They want to privatize the post office. They want to privatize, you know, anything that they want to gut Social Security, like Biden tried three times and Obama tried one time. So it's like, their attitude is, you know, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to sit here with my gun and protect it. No, I don't want no affirmative action. And no, and I don't, you want to use that accent to imply that Trump supporters are all rednecks, but I'm from Tennessee. And, you know, down there they are. But the thing is, they don't even like census takers because they don't like the government poking its nose in their business, you know, to ask who lives here, how long have you lived here, what race are you? So in Kentucky, they will occasionally shoot census takers because they don't believe in government overreach. So libertarians, you know, who are part of the Republican thing, they don't so they even overlap with progressives sometimes because they don't want war. They don't want to spend the money on war. Basically, they don't want the government spending money on anything from social services to, whatever. I mean, they don't have any problem with gays because their thing is live and let live. Well, progressives are saying, no, this is our vision. The government is actually can be bigger, not small government like Republicans and libertarians want, but bigger. And helping people, but looking after the environment, creating green jobs, rebuilding the infrastructure. So it's a really different worldview. Sadly, Joe Biden, Obama, Hillary Clinton are right in the middle between Republicans and progressives on the left. That's why they call them centrists. So a lot of these people who, you know, consider themselves on the left, I'm sorry, Bill Clinton drove the party to the right, and the right's gone even further. When people say that Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat, in terms of policy and wanting to get these giant corporations, you know, like Apple and Amazon, to pay more than 0% of taxes, he is more like a Democrat than what we've gotten used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like,
well, and Republicans, you know, talking about small government, they're the ones who have created more nasty institutions and expanded the overreach of their government institutions into people's lives. I mean, so like, it's like abortion, small government is a bullshit term that doesn't mean anything.
Well, okay, but let's just say that I disagree with conservative, fiscal conservatives, but I do, I mean, that's a way of looking at things. And for this reason, George Bush, the Republican, was looked down on by fiscal conservatives in his party because he did not pay for the Iraq war that he started. So, you know, and this is why, so you have to pay for everything. And, but this is why Nancy Pelosi, who is not a progressive at all, do you know that Joe Biden actually said that he is the most progressive candidate running? And that, you know, Nancy Pelosi is calling herself, you know, look, the Democrats are, I am not certain that Trump won't win, because they say incumbents tend to win. And if the economy is doing well, they almost always win. Now, Trump is a wild card, so I don't know how he'll figure into those established rules, because he, with no political experience and a vulgar, you know, mouth, he, you know, rocketed to the top and got rid of 15 Republican challengers. But what position should I be in now? Hoping that the economy, that the recession comes so that Democrats can be reelected and still not regulate the banks and crash the mortgage market and the economy again and have to be bailed out again? I mean, Bernie is embodying the principles of Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. When he's saying to cancel all medical debt. So this is really a power versus people thing. And, you know, when you look at the coverage in the New York Times and Washington Post, well, there was the big kerfuffle. Are they poisoned against, you know, Bernie Sanders? He said that there were 530,000 bankruptcies from medical costs.
My God, that's a lot.
The Washington Post wrote an article saying that that was not true. Then someone found a screenshot of a previous article by the Washington Post saying that there are 500,000 bankruptcies due to medical emergencies. Due to healthcare costs every year. So they had already published the data. They're so eager to poison people's minds against Bernie Sanders that they're actually completely contradicting their own reporting. And they're too sloppy and desperate to discredit him. So we do have to question the traditional liberal bastions like MSNBC and New York Times and the Washington Post. I mean, they've been caught again and again. Let me put it this way. Why wouldn't the Washington Post want to smear Bernie? He made Amazon pay, put pressure on and got Amazon to pay $15 per hour. He wants corporations to pay their fair share of taxes. Jeff Bezos owns it, wealthiest man in the world. He doesn't pay a dollar in taxes for Amazon. So why would they want to smear Bernie? Can you have any idea whatsoever? Yet these are considered the liberal bastions of the left. They are not really on the left. And we've got to get used to that. And you know what? I'm so inspired by the Bernie supporters. These are young people, and they are actually media watchdogs. They're looking for these contradictions, which are so easy to point out, that young people, they're not pundits. They're not, you know, operatives. They're not hired by a campaign, but they're out there doing the work.
Can I get an amen up? And sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not looking, if you're not looking at beyond a candidate's appearance or skin color or sex or age, and you're not looking at who their donors are, what their past record was, and does it match up with their current campaign, well, then you might as well just say, hello, Trump.
What do you make of people that say, like, Bernie, he's not even a Democrat, as though it's some kind of insult?
As I said, good, because the Democrats have lost it. They've gone so far to the center with the corporate Democrats like Hillary and Obama and Bill Clinton that they're unrecognizable as the party of peace that I went to to protest, you know, with my parents back in the 60s. I mean, you've got the Democratic front runner is Joe Biden, who voted for the Iraq War like Hillary Clinton did. I'll tell you right now, I would never vote for anyone of any party who voted for the Iraq War. Never.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make of maybe the anxiety over sort of the changing face of LGBTQ community? And, you know, sort of the sentiment that we're losing our bars, our venues, our institutions is really stemming from the fact that we just don't have a lot of grassroots voices as much as we used to in the past. And one source of a lot of those voices was LGBT news publications that were mostly run as small businesses in their own communities. And now they've sort of been dwarfed and suffocated to death by the term called verticals, which is when corporate news media creates an LGBT news channel in order to draw advertising dollars and funding dollars away from community-based news and journalism. And, right. And I think that's one serious issue, but I don't know if necessarily, you know, that this change is a bad thing in the way you're pointing that out. It's like seeing LGBT youth and a lot of young people pointing out about the inconsistencies and the hypocrisies of the previous generations is a very healthy thing.
It is a healthy thing. It's the buying up of local voices is happening in radio, where those aren't really your local radio stations. Sinclair Media, you hear Trump, you know, angling with Fox, saying that's not his network anymore, or whatever he's saying. Well, Sinclair Media has been buying up local stations, and they're more Trump than Fox. And I don't hear anybody, you know, talking about this. They're talking about he serves hamburgers, or whose funeral he did or didn't attend, or how the Queen of England welcomed him. You know what? That's all bullshit. And I really have to call out the bullshit Democrats whose only goal is to get rid of Trump, like any Democrat. Vote blue no matter who. If I hear that again, that is never the thing to say in the primary. It's not vote blue no matter. Oh, so Biden. So Biden's in the lead. So you want to just go with Biden, who doesn't even know what city he's in. He was in, New Hampshire and thought he was in Vermont, or vice versa. Maybe I'm senile too. You know, I mean, the stuff that he said, you have poor kids and white kids. He said DACA people become Americans before Americans come Americans on Thursday. These aren't gaffes. He is slow. And then they came out with something that said, you know, oh, well, his brain surgeon examined him. They said that he's as fit mentally as he was 31 years ago. I said, well, first of all, I'm not sure that 31 years ago he was very bright. And if he was, it was kind of diabolical, because his policy positions do not stand up. Mm. And number two, his brain surgeon? Do you not even understand what that sounds like?
It's like Frankenstein or something.
Well, it sounds like, do you trust someone who said brains? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they turn out great. But when you can barely speak, and when you are threatening Trump to a fist fight. But look, this is what the left has done that is going to cause them to possibly lose the election. Focus less on Trump the man. Focus less on Stormy Daniels and things that are or Russia that are unique to him. Focus on how Democrats' policies differ from Republican policies, because Trump ain't nothing but a Republican, and I've never liked them, and I can't believe that, you know, a one like him won over a Democrat. But listen to this. Democrats are offering less and less. Did you not see Nancy Pelosi in 2018 said support for abortion rights isn't a litmus test for Democratic candidates? What? So you've shafted your union base. Obama said, "I'll put on my comfy shoes and march for unions if they're ever challenged." He did nothing of the kind. He ignored them as Wisconsin and Michigan, unions were stripped by Republican governors. And, you know, this is why I had to respond to Hillary and say, "How dare you, talk about Labor Day and union rights?" I mean, if you shit on your base, guess what? You don't get elected. Democrats. And who do you think that you're appealing to when you're saying that abortion rights support isn't a litmus test for Democrats? You're trying to appeal to the people you called deplorables in 2016. And that's the sad truth. The Democratic establishment is shitting on progressives because they would rather spit in their face and unite the party while saying that the Bernie supporters are other. Then they want to attract Trump voters. That is exactly what they're doing, and it is disgraceful. And Nancy has stood in the way of progressive policies since she retook the House in an alarming way. So all that thing about the when AOC had some words with Nancy Pelosi and indicated that she might be a racist, and the press went mad because it's all about racism now. So I always talk about racism. So then Trump got involved and said, Nancy Pelosi is not a racist. Well, you know what? I hate to agree with Nancy or Trump, but she did not say anything to was not dismissive of AOC because she's a racist. She's dismissive of progressives, and that's what the squad are, progressives. So it had nothing to do with their skin color, and if that was what AOC suggested, so then she was silly. So you and she knows that, but to then have the result of this be that with Nancy Pelosi, the House passes a resolution saying that Trump's tweets are racist. Oh, super sleuth. Oh, you mean 3 years later you were able to determine that the guy that announced his candidacy saying that Mexicans are rapists and drug dealers and that Muslims were, rejoicing in New Jersey over 9/11? You finally figured that out and passed a resolution? What the fuck is that resolution going to be? And this is we already know this is what's going to be the gist of the Democratic campaign is to talk about racism, not doing anything about it, just talking about it, just saying, we need to stop the voter suppression. Oh, yeah, so you can get them to vote for Democrats again and then not do anything for them like Obama didn't.
Well, it's like the department, the ICE on their website, put on a 14-word title. We must secure the border and build the wall to make America safe again, which resembles the grammatical structure of a white supremacist slogan known as the 14 words, which is we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And part of that is it's about motivating their base, which is white supremacists, to not only take action, but also to take violent action against all American citizens.
Well, maybe the Democrats are hoping that a lot of black people did not vote in 2016, so they're trying to get them back into the fold. You know, but when you're talking about racism, what are the policies? There's no law that's going to change racism in someone's heart. You can say, we'll have affirmative action. We'll,
You create an environment where those kind of sentiments go underground. You don't create an environment where those are encouraged or fostered.
Well, it's talking about the police state and making fair laws and rules and, education, health care. All those things can go very, very far to fight racism.
Policing? Mm-hmm. Policing? Prisons, private prisons, legalizing weed. I mean, I know black people who don't even drink, so I don't like to say that communities of color are adversely affected by weed and stuff. But, that's what everyone else says. So,
that's what Nixon started. I'll give you Chicago for an instance, is that 80% of arrests for marijuana, for small quantities of marijuana, were African-American people. If you were white and you got caught with pot, you pretty much would get, you'd go away. Like, you, they'd let you off. I know a guy who was found with pounds and pounds of marijuana in his home. And for some other, for some reason, I think he served like a month or two or something. It was the crazy the amount of time that he didn't do.
There's definitely a double standard.
It's also policing. Mm-hmm. It's also policing, because I bet the white people weren't even stopped to see if they had weed.
Yeah. Bunny, what's on the agenda for you this coming month in terms of performances and gigs? Where can people check you out?
Oh, God, I'm running around all over the place. I don't know where my calendar is, but it's escaping me now. Oh, God, I'll be where am I going to be? I'm going to be all over the place. I'm
in going your mama's to- attic.
I am going to visit
your
my mama.
Your daddy's pants?
Never. We broke up. I'm going to be in Sacramento. I'm going to be in L.A. I'm going to be in Helsinki. I'm going to go on a do a couple New Year's Eve gigs in London and Manchester with Bianca. I'm going to do a comedy tour with Katya and Manila and a bunch of those girls, and I'm also doing the Murray and Peter Christmas tour from mid-November to late December with Latrice, Willem.
And Monet. Monet Exchange is doing it, right?
Is she? I love her.
I'm just kidding. Don't you remember? That was the big fight. She said, see ya, I'm going to be hanging out with Madonna.
Yeah,
and they're like, you're a fan for life.
I don't know. Did you see that video?
No, I didn't.
Did you see her in it?
No, I didn't.
Was the song a hit?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Maybe Monet could have stuck with the paying gig.
But it's Madonna.
Mommy, why is that woman wearing an eye patch?
What's your Christmas song?
I have a new version of Santa Baby, which
It's not anything like the Jackie Beats version, is it?
Santa's AIDS-y? What is Jackie Beats?
Santa raped me.
Honey, that is funny. No one ever raped that bitch.
Actually, it was a... It's kind of weird because it's kind of off-putting because nobody wants to think about being raped by Santa. But basically, it was a to give it away. It was because they were trying to pass laws saying like you couldn't get an abortion unless you said you were raped. And so she was trying to say that she wanted to get an abortion, so she had to say that Santa raped her so she could get an abortion.
God, my audiences aren't smart enough to follow that. Good for her. That's a complex, topical.
Oh, it's it's definitely, there's a formula. There's a chart there.
Yeah.
She's such a prolific writer that she has to use a music stand because she can't remember all But now I love that Jackie performed in Israel and met a couple of hot guys, and now she's kind of it broke a dry spell, and now she's she's got the fever.
She's got the beaver.
The fever and the beaver. I mean, she can make a beaver with her stomach. I mean, she's got holes all over. She's got holes and rolls.
Spongy. She can suck up the juice. But it's so good talking to you.
I know.
Really,
it's been a while.
It is good talking to me.
Yes. It's good to talking to both of you.
Yes. Mm. Come and hang out with us sometime in Chicago. We can have an orgy with strangers and get AIDS.
You can't catch it twice.
It's a gift. You just keep on giving it.
That's right.
And taking it. And puking it on your crotch.
And then getting some prep.
And get some prep. I'm on prep. I got some pills.
Prep or what's the other one? Post-exposure? Strap. You do it all?
Yeah. You don't even need to be on prep. You just take post-exposure.
God. I like condoms. Call me old school, but...
Do you suck dicks through condoms?
Of course.
You suck Sacha Baron Cohen's dick through a condom.
Shut up. I wish.
I saw the video footage. And I know you well enough to know you tried.
He's sexy.
Oh, yeah, baby. I wouldn't say no.
He's a category 5 basement flooding. Ooh.
I don't think your river ever stopped flowing. I think you're what they call heavy flow. And the blood coming out of you is not menstrual. Which of your listeners is hard after hearing all that?
I think they all are.
You know, what a friend we have in common has been telling me how cute and handsome I am.
You have blind friends?
Yeah. Fred Schneider, he said he wants to come on the podcast, but he's worried he'd be too nervous talking to me.
Oh, my God. Well, you do ask some awful questions, but I just bought my ticket. I'm going to go see them in September 24th.
The B-52s.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got me Somerset. Worried for a second. It was like, oh, Lady Bunny's going to see drag queens on tour.
I better go because someone's beeping in.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye, darling.
Bye. Thank love you. Ya.
Love ya.
Lady Bunny lives in New York City. You can learn more about her and follow her on tour at ladybunny.net. So what do you make about the changing face of LGBT culture and drag? I mean, things have to change. If it stays the same, it's going to be horrible.
There's always still going to be that drag queen in that weird little bar putting on a show for a group of 10 people late at night. You know what I mean?
Shine on, you crazy diamonds.
And I think that's really kind of in many ways where drag really shines. And of course, you know, it's great to see it like on the television show. It's like growing up as a little kid, I loved seeing Geraldine in drag. I loved seeing people cross dress. And I'm so glad that kids today have that opportunity to see that, because it does, you know, it makes the world a bigger, more open place. You know, and it's great that people can have careers doing drag and making money for art, and it brings people out and they see it, and I think it's a wonderful kind of thing.
But as Peaches Christ points out, most drag queens don't have careers doing drag. Mm-hmm. And drag is still very much a very misunderstood and complicated thing. And if you're not on television or associated with a television show like Lady Bunny is, mm-hmm. it's still an uphill battle to pay your bills, to exist. Mm. And part of that is we live in a capitalistic society. And one thing that I'd like to hear more people talking about, just how unfair it is that, you know, drag queens have to hustle for dollars when we don't have universal health care, where we have to pay for education, when where the cost of living keeps going up and up, but our income from our jobs doesn't stay matching those things. And then when you see, you know, our community voices being extinguished or suffocated because these rich corporations see the LGBTQ dollar and they want to a piece of that action. And so they replicate literally things that have been around for 15 years, like this podcast. I mean, how many copies of Feast of Fun are there of just this podcast out there in the world? And it is sort of like to the point of that scene from The Simpsons where Homer gets copied so many times that you forget which one was the original. Mm-hmm. And then he starts talking to the Family Guy and, you know, and in order to get rid of all the copies of Homer Simpson, they hold a giant donut and drag it over a cliff, and all the Homers jump off to their death, leaving only one standing. And then Marge Simpson that night with Homer in bed, and they're asking, you know,
which one are you?
And
he's like, Homer.
First one off cliff. And that's sometimes, you know, the thing I feel with a lot of LGBT news organizations is that they were, in my heyday, community voices. There were people we personally knew. Mm. There were places you could visit and interact with. And now there are these institutions in far off places that we don't know who they are. They're not people we are familiar with. They're not understanding our needs. And it's unnerving. And, you know, we're able to be here and do these podcasts because of your financial support. Feast of Fun is made possible because of you.
And the best way to support the podcast is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/patreon, where you get behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at things coming and happening and about to happen and have happened.
Exciting and new! Mm-hmm. And you can get in orgies with legends like Lady Bunny! So gorgeous, so wonderful. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm Mark Fillion.
I'm Fausto Furnos.
Bye-bye.